The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, good morning. How are you?
Good to hear everybody was entertained by more than just the Oscars and, of course, the Will Smith bit slap. We'll leave you all to interpret it the way you wish about hairstyles and things like that. Howard, I'm a little with you on the whole issue of bald head and making jokes about it, but obviously Will Smith didn't see it in the same way. There was a little story from the Dead Sea yesterday. A group of children were out hiking.
So frightening.
And around 42 of the children somehow became disconnected from the main group. These are children aged between the fifth and the eighth grades, were on a hike around the area of Nahal Og yesterday. And they were disconnected from their group. And around 7 o'clock, the call went out to say, children have got lost in the area of the Dead Sea, and of course, darkness descending. It was interesting that the Dead Sea Rescue Unit was immediately summoned. Volunteers arrived in that area to begin their search for these children. They used drones in order to locate where these children were, which is an amazing use of this technology. And I never thought about the possibility of doing that. But obviously, with the hills and with the mountains in between, you could literally just launch a drone and watch on the screen to see what's happening in the surrounding area. Ultimately, these drones were able to find only some of the children. They'd been disconnected in various groups. By 11 o'clock last night, there was a happy ending. All 42 children had been found. Helicopters were even put up into the air in order to try to find them. So all safe and sound. But just another use of drone technology, which caught my attention.
Yeah, it was a very, very frightening moment, you know, especially with two ISIS attacks in as short as a few days, really. I don't know, my brain just went to the worst of the worst. Thankfully that those kids are safe. The negative summit in Stabokker concluded yesterday with an undertaking to make this a permanent event. It certainly sounds like a very successful event. What progress was made?
I don't know if you said negative or negative, but I heard negative, so I hope you
heard that. No, negative. I was quite the opposite. I thought it was incredibly positive.
I agree. I think that this summit was a very good step forward. A few little interesting snippets around the edges. First of all, we understand that Israeli Foreign Minister Yair Lapid had the opportunity to meet separately with each of the representatives that came from the Arab countries, from Morocco, from Bahrain, from the United Arab Emirates, and from Egypt. They each had bilateral meetings with Yair Lapid, and then there was a group meeting. Also, of course, let's not forget U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who was there as well and who also played his part. There were some reports that suggested that while Iran was Israel's main focus, it was not necessarily the case on the part of all of the other participants, although we do understand that the threat that is posed by Iran and Iranian proxies, whether they be Houthis, whether they be Hamas, whether they be Hezbollah, whether they be representatives in southern Syria, this is something of a common bond that unites all of these countries that came together yesterday in Stabokker. But what was interesting for me is that there was a report that suggested that, at least behind closed doors, Antony Blinken had clarified that the U.S. has not yet made a final decision regarding the removal of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps from its list of foreign terrorist organizations. And this is a big, big deal, certainly for Israel and probably also for the other countries, the other Arab countries who were represented there, because the moment that organization gets listed from the list of terror organizations, then it is the green light for huge amounts of funding, for release of assets to enable that organization to continue to carry out its terror activities that it has been carrying out, even under the current sanctions regime, which should theoretically make it much more difficult for the revolutionary guards to carry out their terror activities. And yet they still continue to be operational, very, very active. And so one can imagine that if those sanctions are lifted, that the threat will be so much more than is the case up until now. So Antony Blinken trying to reassure those countries represented at the summit yesterday that the decision has not yet been made, which doesn't mean they're not going to do it. It just means that I suppose he's trying to send a slightly kind of conciliatory message to say we haven't yet decided. But the other interesting point which came out of this meeting is that there's been a decision to make this a permanent event. And Yair Lapid, Israel's foreign minister, yesterday announced that the foreign ministers had decided to turn the Negev summit into a permanent one that will apparently meet regularly, but possibly even twice each year. And the plan is, according to Yair Lapid, to also join, to also invite the Palestinian Authority to join in order to, in his words, work towards a shared future of progress and success. And he said that working groups would be established in the areas of counterterrorism and defense, education, health, tourism, food, water, and energy. So this is not only about security and defense, but it's also about many, many other important and very, very positive things where there could be cooperation between these countries with the view to sharing, as he put it, a better shared future for all of the countries involved. And I think that that is all very, very good news. On the other side of the fence, literally, the King of Jordan made a very rare trip to Ramallah yesterday to meet with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. Now, for the King of Jordan to come to Ramallah to hold that meeting is considered to be highly unusual, hasn't happened for a very, very long time. And it gives one the impression that the Jordanians may have felt just a little left out of the party. There was some talk at one stage very, very late in the day, Friday and Saturday, that a Jordanian representative may also join the Negev summit. As it turned out, that didn't happen. And it's not exactly clear why a Jordanian representative was not either invited or was invited but decided not to turn up. It's not clear exactly how that worked out. But it was very noticeable that the king decided to travel to Ramallah on exactly the same day to meet with the Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. Another little snippet is that Defense Minister Benny Gantz had wanted to go to Ramallah to join that meeting, and Prime Minister Naftali Bennett said no, he's not allowing Benny Gantz to go and join the meeting with the King of Jordan and the Palestinian Authority President. So just some interesting politics going on, because at least in our press there is some talk about a black cat having passed between Naftali Bennett and Benny Gantz, their relationship apparently not at the best at the moment, and potentially even going further downhill as a result of that decision by the Prime Minister not to allow Benny Gantz to travel to Ramallah. The Prime Minister and the Defense Minister are both due to travel to India this week for meetings with Indian officials. It's not clear whether Prime Minister Naftali Bennett will be well enough to travel, given that he's been officially diagnosed with corona. And interestingly, Benny Gantz was due to have traveled already today to go to India ahead of the Prime Minister. So some indications that their relationship is not exactly as we would like it to be at the moment.
That's not good. That isn't. And do we know how he's doing health-wise?
We haven't had a health update from the Prime Minister's office, but he seems to have been very, very active in spite of being officially diagnosed with corona. The official word that came out was that he is well, he's fine, he's doing okay, he's not suffering. I have come across a number of cases where people initially felt okay after the diagnosis and then became a little weaker in the days that followed, and then recovered afterwards. So it's not exactly clear what state the Prime Minister is in at the moment, but we do get the impression that he's been very, very busy and very active in spite of having to stay home and be isolated as a result of having caught corona.
In light of the recent terror attacks, the Shin Bet has been working around to round up further suspects to prevent an escalation. What do we know about what is going on now?
We are told this morning that the Shin Bet have already rounded up some 12 people who are connected somehow to Islamic State, to ISIS, to the extremist Muslim philosophy that comes out of that. And that they are currently working more and more in order to round up suspects, to gather whatever illegal weapons might be out there. And in fact, there was an announcement from the Prime Minister yesterday saying that he'd met with security officials and that he set out a plan in order to try to deal with the particular problem that Israel is facing right now. By the way, a very, very rare admission on the part of the Shin Bet, who said that the attack that took place in Hadera the day before yesterday could have been a lot worse. The intentions of the attackers was to kill a lot of people and to cause mayhem, that the Shin Bet, according to their own admission, should have known about this, that this is a rare failure on their part, in order that they didn't pick this up ahead of time, that they didn't detect somehow through the intelligence network, through the work that they normally do, that this was a ticking time bomb, which is the term that they like to use for terror attacks that are about to take place. And so the Prime Minister yesterday stepped in right away, in spite of him being isolated at home. He held meetings with security officials. He ordered the security officials to use whatever means are available to them in order to clamp down on the rise in terrorism. And then there was a few bullet points that were issued as part of the statement as to what the Prime Minister has issued, has what he's declared should be done in order to deal with this. These things include continuation of extensive operational efforts, including judicial and economic and intelligence and digital means, in order to in order to investigate and to prevent further attacks from taking place, a reinforcement of all security elements, especially during this time as we go into the Pesach holiday, which is soon followed by Yom HaTzmaut and Lag BaOmer and other events, time when people are out and about and on holiday. So that was really emphasized. He expanded the carrying of weapons by IDF conscripts and by reservists. He wants to use injunctions and administrative detention orders against terrorists subject to the presentation of the appropriate legal basis. He wants the security forces to monitor discourse on social media in order to identify those engaged in incitement and potential terrorists. He wants to strengthen the dialogue with public leaders and opinion makers in the Arab sector in order to preserve some stability. And of course, continue and expand the Israel police operation to seize weapons in relevant areas where these weapons are illegally held. So these are the points. This is the plan that the Prime Minister has presented in order to somehow take back control of what seemed to be a rising incident of terrorism, and a certainly a concerning indication.
Yeah, it's tremendously, tremendously worrying, and you just we just hope that it moves in the right direction. The 10,000th new immigrant, I wish there would be an easier number to say, since the outbreak of the Ukrainian war has arrived in Israel. How is Israel managing with the new arrivals? Are they being integrated? What is happening?
So this is obviously a massive challenge for Israel, even though Israel has had experience with taking on new immigrants. This is already not a new experience for Israel to have to experience, and yet, you know, this is a massive challenge. 10,000 new immigrants. We're not talking about people who are just refugees in Israel. We're talking about immigrants who've come to live in Israel. Not all of them Ukrainian, because even though this is a number that's been counted since the start of the Ukrainian war, there are some who've come from Russia and from Belarus. And even though they are not Ukrainian and obviously come from different countries, the local Aliyah office has chosen to sort of lump them all together, because they feel that this is kind of just part of the same story, even though these people come from slightly different locations. So yesterday there was a little ceremony at Ben Gurion Airport to mark the 10,000th new immigrant coming from Ukraine, as in this was the case yesterday. And yet Israel is working tremendously hard, first of all, to house these people as soon as they arrive here, to find accommodation for them, in order to find schooling systems and a framework for children to operate within so that they can feel comfortable. There are a few interesting little anecdotes about the way in which the immigrants are coming, particularly those coming from the Ukraine, from Ukraine, is that many of them are coming, women and children only, the men folk are being held back, staying behind in order to serve in the military. And so we have a particular situation where most of the immigrants are coming without a father figure, without a man in the family, mothers running away with their children, at least for now. And Sasha Zoblin was yesterday a relatively good example. He came not with his parents, but with his grandparents to be the 10,000th new immigrant from Ukraine. And so he has left his parents behind in Kharkiv while they are dealing with issues on the ground. His father unlikely to be able to come, at least for the foreseeable future, but they've decided that he should come.